I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Specters, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with Sam, as usual. Sam, welcome back, man. We've got more Liara to talk about.
Yet again, more Liara.
More Liara. That's
April is just, oops, all Liara.
Oops, all Liara. So, well, let's just get right into it. We've been talking about some of the comics and the things that have been going on in the background of the games and the stuff between Mass Effect 1 and 2. Liara doesn't spend a whole lot of time in Mass Effect 2, but we definitely have some more things to talk about, right? We learned how she got Shepard's body back, well, at least to Cerberus. So now where do we go? Where does it go from here?
Right, yeah. So in that last episode when we were talking about the second half of the Redemption comic, we saw Liara and Farron get to the Shadow Broker's base on, I believe the planet's name is Alangon. When they get there, ultimately they interrupt the transfer of Shepard's body between Giga Chad Salarian and the Collector. And they interrupt it. Farron basically takes one for the team, and he distracts Tazik, the Salarian, while Liara runs on board his ship, Tazik's ship, and escapes Chadzik. With Shepard's remains.
Chadzik.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Liara escapes, and in the meantime, she's, you know, running to the ship, and then Farron is like, you know, go now. So as far as Liara knows, Farron is toast, and she had to leave him behind. And so that's kind of where it ends with the Redemption comic, with, you know, eventually, of course, Liara returning Shepard's remains to Cerberus, Miranda telling her, you know, we don't know if we can actually revive Shepard because they're in terrible shape. And then Liara says, well, we've made enemies, so I'm going to go prepare. So it's a short jump then back to the game of Mass Effect 2. After the Lazarus Project part, and more importantly, to the part where we find Liara in Mass Effect 2. And at this point, she has apparently become an information broker on the Asari world of Ilium.
Right. But so she hasn't faced the Shadow Broker yet, right? And now she's basically doing the same job that Farron did?
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, Farron was an information broker, and now that's what she's doing. Remember when I brought up Liara's line to Farron in one of the comics that said, have you ever considered, excuse me, I got to do the Liara voice.
Hey, this is a fan favorite now. Everybody loves this. In fact, maybe you should just do this voice all the time.
I don't know how I feel about that, but here's what she says to Farron. Have you ever considered that it doesn't have to be about money?
Perfect. And, spot on. I was just picturing her in my mind. It was exactly her.
You have to go, you know, a little bit feminine and then very breathy. Has a similar air as like Ryan Reynolds.
Yes, you have to basically do a Ryan Reynolds impression.
Wow. A female Ryan Reynolds impression, but also like half of your mind is just thinking about something else.
Lady Deadpool is Liara. Confirmed.
Confirmed. This is canon.
It's canon.
And anyone who argues with us is fake news.
Right, because that's how the internet works. Everyone's wrong and I'm right all the time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And anyone who disagrees with me is now my mortal enemy.
Right. Even on the tiniest little point. Anyway, this quote is good. Have you ever considered that it doesn't have to be about money, right? Like, hey, there's other things that motivate me, which is a clear perspective from her that she's clearly being motivated by things other than money here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she acts on it. So I think this was deliberately dropped at that point in the lore, because at that point, of course, you know, Liara had not, like, people wouldn't have gotten to Mass Effect 2 in the lore. And I think this was deliberately dropped because she became a fellow information broker. But knowing her personality, you know, I highly doubt it was for the money. And that doesn't mean that she's incorruptible or that she'll be this, you know, perpetually gullible archaeologist either.
Sure, sure.
Things have changed significantly for the player when you enter Mass Effect 2. And I'm talking about in terms of her personality. So we have a little clip of it here. It's the very first time that we meet her in Mass Effect 2. And right off the bat, you can tell she is a changed person.
Have you faced an Asari commando unit before? Few humans have. I'll make it simple. Either you pay me, or I flay you alive. With my mind. Shepard! Nyxeris, hold my calls. Shepard. My sources said you were alive, but I never believed. It's very good to see you.
You're threatening to flay people alive now?
Oh, that was just a customer unhappy with the information he received. He'll pay. They always do. Ever since I helped you stop Saren, people have wanted to be my friend, or not be my enemy. I've set up a respectable business as an information broker. It's paid the bills since you... well, for the past 2 years. And now you're back, gunning for the collectors with Cerberus.
You know, there is a stark shift in her personality. If you are somebody who just played Mass Effect 1 and then you come into this, especially if you're playing them like back to back, rather than waiting a few years and going, oh, yeah, I don't remember her to be exactly like this. But, you know, like somebody who just got in the last few years and just played them back to back, that is a stark contrast.
Oh, yeah. Going straight from, oh, my stars.
Right.
To I will murder you.
Yeah. I will flay you with my mind.
Yeah, and not to mention, you know,
I'm going to start using that against people on the internet who pick arguments.
just you know what? Quote the Reapers to them. see how that goes. But yeah, the takeaways, you know, that first line that she says, have you faced an Asari commando unit before? That is the same exact thing her mom says, Matriarch Benezia, in Mass Effect 1.
Oh, cool. Oh, cool. So that's a direct callback. Yeah.
It definitely is. And I found it to be interesting, at least for me, because back in Mass Effect 1, when we meet Benezia, if you've recruited Liara by that point, she is such a different character, you know, and Benezia is this, you know, corrupted person, you know, just and I think it's even more insightful that throughout Mass Effect 1, we learn that Liara is resentful, really, of her mother's embrace of, you know, Saren and indoctrination and the dark side, so to speak. But despite all of that, we see in Mass Effect 2 that she is becoming like her.
Right. Yeah, this is a literary device that shows up in stories all the time, whether they're shows or novels or whatever, where you define a character with certain qualities and certain traits, and then you have another character who pushes back against that character and says, well, no, I'm never going to be like that. They're terrible, whatever. And then the character arc for that character starts to reflect the original character that they were critiquing, which shows the destination of their path. Should they not change their ways, right? Like this is a potential foreshadowing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It felt similar to some arcs that we see in Star Wars, you know, about, you know, basically Jedi's perhaps embracing the dark side a little too much. But I also think that it's poignant because it has like this kind of connection to reality. You know how they say the more you hate someone, the more you might become like them. And especially so.
Yeah.
If it's with a parent.
Right. Or the things that you criticize in other people are things that you already hate about yourself. Like that is something the older I get, the more I find to be true. Like my first response, I'm trying to train myself of like when I see somebody do something that I don't like or something, you know, sometimes you just meet somebody and you're just like, I just don't like that. I just don't like this person. Like, usually that means there's something going on in you. It's not them. I mean, it might be them. They might be terrible people. But sometimes it means that there's something in you that you see in them and you hate that part about yourself. And that's why that feeling specifically happens and feels so strong, as opposed to just like, screw them, forget them. It's like that deeper sense of like, there's something like, it's a weird thing that happens in human psychology.
It reminds me of a phrase that my mom used to say. She used to say, you know, hatred is like hating someone is like taking poison and hoping they die.
Yeah, right, right. Well, yeah, that's the whole thing of like we hold on to it. You just poison yourself. So yeah, let it go. Forgiveness. Right?
Yeah, right.
That whole thing. Yeah.
But I think it's even added at this point because it's these unresolved emotions that she had with her mom. And they'll never be resolved. Not really, because her mom's dead now. And now she's mimicking her mother. So, and that kind of leads me into my other takeaway that, you know, aside from her mom, even if her mom never said that phrase, you know, it's this decidedly cold, harsh, mercenary tone. Mm-hmm. And you got to ask, like, you know, most players will, they'll see that and they'll go, why? You know, what changed?
Right, right. Like, if you only play the games, you don't have the rest of the story between those two things. But since we've seen in the comics, we know that she's been through a lot by this point.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the thing. I think a lot of players did not read the comics.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you're right. Even if you haven't played the comics, you can think through it like this. You know, she's witnessed a lot of trauma to this point. First, her mom being killed after becoming indoctrinated. So first it was like she lost her mom to this ideological battle, you know, and then mind control. So she lost her metaphorically that way. And then literally after her mom dies, all while she has this, you know, unresolved problems with her outside of her embracing the dark side. You know, her and her mom were at odds. That's why she ran away from home. And so she had those familial problems that aren't too unusual with her mom, but they never got resolved. And now they will always remain unfinished. And I can't imagine the level of guilt that she might feel, or, you know, like survivor's guilt, or just cognitive dissonance, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there's a number of different emotions that are all kind of wrapped up in this, along with sometimes people fear, like you kind of mentioned, turning into their parent. This, like, I don't know, the dread of like, well, they went down that path. Maybe I will too. And then that baggage, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, okay, so that's like the first instance of trauma that we know of in Liara's life, aside from having basically being the product of a divorce. You know, she is the product of a divorce, and then her mom dies. And then there's this heroic figure that comes into her life, you know, saving her from a dig site, a Prothean dig site, and showing her what it means to stand up to corruption. Shepard is standing up to Saren, you know,
right.
and stagnant politics, that the council is refusing to believe in the Reapers. And here is this heroic populist figure who is like, you know, I'll cut through the red tape and I'll do the right thing. And then that figure dies before her very eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like she was kind of, I don't know, hitching her wagon to the Shepard train. That's a terrible analogy.
I'm sure she would have loved to have had a Shepard train.
But then the train wrecks and then she has to keep going, you know, and then like you gotta move on.
That was a train wreck. You're right. The Shepard train crashes into the planet Alkara and burns up. It's a fiery train wreck. And then after that, you know, the trauma doesn't end. She tracks down Shepard's remains, right? And for no other motive, apparently, than to make sure that they're not disrespected. We know that because of what she tells Miranda in the end of the comic, that, right, you know, even if Cerberus can't revive Shep, that it's okay, because she basically just did that to make sure the collectors couldn't desecrate this hero's remains. And in so doing, in tracking down Shepard's remains, she makes an unlikely ally in a shadow broker triple agent, Farron,
yeah, right,
who, as far as she knows, you know, Farron, you know, is giving his life to make sure that she can escape with the remains and so that she can hold the collectors accountable and do the right thing, yada, yada, yada. So then there's this other, like, you know, unlikely redemption of a kind of heroic figure in her eyes, Farron. And she sees that before her very eyes. Mm-hmm. And she's in this other, like, the second consecutive highly traumatic position where she is powerless, kind of. She had to escape with the remains. There was no way she was going to beat all those forces staying there.
Right, right, right. She couldn't turn and fight. She had to run. And that doesn't feel good. Even though you survive, it doesn't feel good.
Right. So many of her closest people to her have died suddenly or vanished, you know, unexpectedly, and have left unfinished business. And so basically, I'm thinking that if I were Liara, and during those 2 years that Shepard is gone, yeah, I'd probably become bitter as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's such a stark difference if you're just going from one game to the next. Just be all of a sudden, oh, she wants to flay somebody with her mind? Wait a minute, who is this? You know, but it adds up. Like, it totally makes sense. And I feel like that's a very real thing. Like, sometimes people come across one way and then you see the other side of them, or time goes on and people change. Like, or that part was deep down inside to begin with. It was just not revealed.
Well, the thing is that we also haven't even addressed the fact that we're approaching this from a point of view that, you know, that Shepard has not romanced Liara. Like, if right. Shepard and Liara have been a couple, then this is like an entirely new added layer of trauma that, you know, you watch not just your hero, but also your lover die. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So where does this continue on? Like, what's next?
Right. Well, I also wanted to mention the fact that toward the end of that clip, she mentions that Shepard is back gunning for the collectors with Cerberus. And I was surprised about that, because why is she surprised here? According to the comics, you know, she arranged for Shepard's remains to go back to Cerberus. Why is she surprised? She should have known or expected this.
Yeah. Do you think it's just one of those, like, different people wrote the different things, and so all the pieces don't necessarily connect?
Well, I don't think so, because Mass Effect Redemption was written by one of the lead writers on the series. So, you know, the lead writer might not have written every piece of dialogue, but I believe it would have had to go through them for at least an editorial check. Yeah. But the other thing is, because of the release of these different forms of media, I think that basically the game was meant to be a standalone. They knew that not everyone was going to get the comic that got the game.
Right.
So maybe they thought, okay, we got to put something in here that would make sense for someone who hasn't read the comic.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that.
Or maybe she thought that Miranda's last words to her were right. You know, that they wouldn't be able to revive Shepard. But
the surprise is more that Shepard's there at all, less of what he's doing. Or what they're doing.
Or maybe that, you know, they're back, and not only are they back, but they're working with Cerberus. Like, maybe she expected them to be more renegade about it and just say, thanks for the revival, bye.
Right. You know? Right. And yeah, I think that's kind of a common theme in Mass Effect 2, is a lot of people are very surprised how buddy-buddy they seem to be.
Yeah, and this, there's another layer too. The elusive man tells Shepard, you know, that he thinks that Liara may have started working for the Shadow Broker, because she's an information broker, and that's why he's not a fan of Liara being on Shep's squad while they're working for Cerberus. I think I'm remembering that right. That one's just off the top of my head, so someone correct me if I'm wrong. But maybe there, if that's true, then maybe there was a falling out with Cerberus and Liara and Cerberus in the little itty bitty gap between the events of Mass Effect Redemption and when we meet her in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we have the rest of this meeting. Well, let's, you want to take a look at that?
Yeah, let's take a look at that and we'll analyze that part.
That's not exactly public knowledge.
Neither is you being alive, Shepard. Information is my business now. And if you need information on finding people, I'm happy to help.
What about you, Liara? I could use your help on this mission.
I can't, Shepard. I'm sorry. I have commitments here, things I need to take care of.
What kind of things do you need to take care of? Are you in trouble?
No, no trouble. But it's been a long 2 years. I had things to do while you were gone. I have debts to repay.
I closed my eyes, and all I can picture is you doing the voice now.
I have debts to repay.
It's the same. It's identical.
I bet you're wondering if I was firing 5 shots or 6. Well, you gotta ask yourself, do you feel lucky, punk?
It's space punk.
Yeah, I used that line on Chadzik when we were talking about Chadzik a couple episodes ago. Mm-hmm. I'm just a huge Dirty Harry fan over here, I guess.
I guess so.
So now it's somewhat undoubtable that Liara does feel guilt for Farron being captured. And I'm thinking this is the wedge that drove her between her and Cerberus, because they told her that they have no intention of saving Farron. Mm-hmm. And I think that she also intends to make well on those debts she mentioned, even without the even if you don't play or didn't have the Shadowbroker DLC, because, you know, this conversation happens regardless of whether you have the DLC, right. DLC installed.
The conversation would have happened before the DLC was even released.
Right. I guess, you know, I always played with the DLC.
Yeah. So my initial playthrough, no DLCs were out. Like, I finished Mass Effect 2, no DLCs were available. That was the end. Right. And playing through them with DLCs is a completely different experience, because you just kind of move on to the next part. Right. Like, the original people would have had a very different perspective on this.
And it's so interesting, because I know a lot of people did play at least without the Lair of the Shadowbroker DLC. And given what we know in Mass Effect 3, Liara goes ahead with this revenge mission with or without Shepard. So, you know, that's the bridge basically for the players who didn't have the DLC. But it's interesting, because then you can headcanon and think about, I wonder how that mission against the Shadowbroker went with Liara, but without Shepard. So let's also talk about, you know, how she greets Shepard. And that was, we saw a little bit of that in the previous clip. You know, while Ashley Arcaden, the Vermeier survivor, is pretty standoffish on Horizon, Garrus is a bro, Tally is like, I'm glad to see you. You know, she is really the only character to go in for a hug and embrace Shepard warmly, even if you didn't romance her.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, that stays true to some of the stuff we talked about on the previous episodes of, even if she wasn't the romance character, she was still kind of the character that got inserted in the scene in order for you to see some sort of emotional connection. So that kind of follows through here.
It does. And you remember how we were talking about in one of the first Liara episodes that we did, that I said that some players feel like Liara is the canon romance.
Right. Right.
It's this continued pattern of how closely Liara considers herself to Shepard, mm-hmm. regardless of whether you romanced her or not. And I've heard other players say, you know, that they just think it's a little bit of hero worship. I don't know about that, but what I do know is, like, the facts are right there. She goes in for the hug, and it's a close embrace of Shepard. And I think some players have told me that she even makes some jealous remarks during the Shadowbroker DLC, even when they did not romance her in the first game. I don't know if they're confusing their playthroughs, but that's what I've heard.
Huh. Yeah, that would be interesting. If you know more about that, let us know, because...
Yeah. Well, I know that I've gotten the jealous remarks before, but that's because I have romanced her in Mass Effect 1.
Right.
And then gotten to Mass Effect 2 and was already in the process of romancing someone else when I was doing the Shadowbroker DLC.
Right. I haven't romanced her, but I don't remember specifics around jealous remarks or not. So I can't really answer that for you.
Some of them are pointed, man. I mean, we'll have to talk about them next episode. But for now, you know, beyond this, in this first meeting, Liara kind of acts like a quest giver. You know, she's like a central quest hub, basically, for Samara and Thane, and giving Shepard the leads on how to chase them down to recruit them. She does know what's going on here on Ilium, you know, enough to know that she's always being watched and listened to, like she tells Shepard. And maybe this is why she doesn't open up a little bit more at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've got more to talk about, but we have to take a quick break and go thank our patrons. Plus, we've got another planet card. Planet cards are back.
It's so a long one, too. It's a big planet card.
This is a big planet card, so don't go anywhere.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons, including our three newest patrons, Dale G, Julatsa, I hope I pronounced that correctly, and Chris S. Welcome to the Patreon. We are so glad that you are here. And to all of our patrons, everyone who supports the show financially or just keeps tuning in, joins us during the live shows, shares it with your friends, rates the show, any of that stuff. We really do appreciate it. It keeps us going. And it also makes us feel really good. You make our day when you leave us kind comments and things like that. So thank you for being here and for doing that. If you are interested in joining us on the Patreon, head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. Check out all the different stuff you can get. Ad-free episodes, t-shirts, stickers, joining us on patron chats, all of that stuff. Plus, you can also get shout out every week like our Shepherd tier patrons, Ed Boy, Kira C, Lieutenant Cicino, and William. Thank you so much to all of you especially. And we do have a new review that came in. Sam, check this out. This is from Nick SS in the United States, who writes, "I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite Lorecast on the Citadel. One of my favorite podcasts I've discovered. I am a huge fan of this podcast and would recommend it to anyone who is interested in Mass Effect. I really appreciate Sam's devotion to digging up lore, and his funny character intros are always very entertaining and funny. I also really appreciate Tom's analogies to real-world events. It always is a joy to hear Tom and Sam during my day. I am about 1 year behind on episodes, but I'm catching up. This podcast reignited the spark for me in Mass Effect, and I'm still riding the high about three quarters through a new playthrough of Mass Effect 2. Nick, thank you so much for that. Such kind words. Again, this stuff makes our days. So thank you so much for taking the time to do that. If you would like to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. You can also rate us on Spotify. All of that is extremely helpful, or just share it with your friends. And we've got a planet card. Sam?
Planet card.
Planet card. Which all planet right. are we going to?
We're going to Ilium. Maybe I should read this all in Liara's voice. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody will love that.
That's a lot. Okay, I'll do it.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but twist my arm. Why don't you? So, all right. Ilium. There's two separate planet cards for this, depending on if you're playing Mass Effect 2 or 3. So we're going to start with Mass Effect 2. Ilium is a classic garden world developed to serve as, what is that word?
Entrepot?
As entrepot between the Terminus systems and the Asari republics. To abet this trade, the normally stringent custom laws of Council Space on product safety, prescribed materials, and sapient trafficking are relaxed. I feel it slipping. I feel it.
It's all right. It's all right. Just do the rest.
Okay. Officially, Ilium is not an Asari world. It is colonized and operated by Asari corporate interests. This gives it the same legal latitude enjoyed by the human corporate research enclaves of Novaria. So if you notice some similarities between Novaria and Ilium, that might be why. Ilium is one of the youngest Asari colonies settled during the 7th expansion wave. Now, this is a typical example of like a proper noun that it gives you, like you should know, but I don't think many people know about the sequential expansion waves.
Expansion waves, right? Like, what's the difference between the 6th one and the 7th one? Like, yeah.
You don't know your expansion waves? Okay. Does this guy even lorecast?
Clearly not.
Apparently not. So it also goes on to say, the firstborn child on the world is only now reaching her middle age. Because of how old Asari lives. So, you know, the world is hot and massive. Ground settlement is only possible at higher polar altitudes. In more equatorial locations, the population is housed in arcology skyscrapers to escape the heat of the surface. Come Mass Effect 3, that one changes a little bit. That little planet card, we see this little addition. It says, Reaper forces met a surprising amount of resistance at Ilium. Its leaders were paranoid about keeping their fortunes and were influential in both Terminus and Citadel space. They acquired a large defense fleet and a high number of fission weapons. I lost my place. And in the brief space battle, used them on the Reaper's fleet troop transports rather than their near impervious capital ships. As a result, the inevitable ground invasion has been slowed to a crawl as the Reapers manufacture more troops. I thought this was really interesting because I've read through a lot of planet cards now, and this seems to be one of the only planets that we see this tactic being used of targeting the troop transports. as well as Ilium's wealth looks to have afforded it better access to military contractors, because this is in the Terminus systems. It's not getting protection from any organized state military, you know, and yet there's a lot of money there. So there's a lot of investments to protect. And yet they were extremely effective, I guess, in slowing the ground invasion, which is like genius.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like they found a weak spot. You know, take out the troop.
Exactly.
Points. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank goodness for the filthy rich. And more, there's some more flavor text about Ilium actually from the Codex. I found this interesting as well. A regional hub of Asari commerce, awash in riches, Ilium is infamous for its abusive labor practices and legalization of nearly everything except murder. As such, Ilium is the preferred production site for weapons and pharmaceuticals that would be illegal nearly everywhere else, made even more lucrative by legal indentured servitude.
Awesome. That's just called slavery.
That's called hyper-capitalism, baby.
Oh, boy.
So it goes on to say, the Codex says, despite the dangers of its products, Ilium is renowned for glamour, luxury, and safety provided by near-total surveillance, making it a favored tourist destination. Countless celebrities maintain palatial estates on Ilium and in its capital, Nos Astra. The sole obstacle to business on Ilium is its extensive bureaucracy, tolerated only for its provision of security. Regardless of the character of its economy, Ilium's self-congratulatory media exalts its own society with the provincial arrogance of, quote, new money, glorifying in, quote, sexiest CEOs and, quote, 10 richest residents list.
This is basically Cyberpunk 2077, right? Like, this is the dark future.
It kind of sounds like Dubai.
Okay. It's kind of like Dubai. I mean, in some ways, we're kind of headed in this direction. It feels like one of those, you know, like, this is where things could possibly go. Warning.
Yeah, it's safe for whom, by the way? Saying it's safe. Well, for whom? Right, I don't think it's safe for those indentured servants.
Yeah, the top 1% have it real nice.
Right. And you mentioned Cyberpunk. Yeah. Liara has basically descended into Night City. And yeah. I think part of her newly donned dark demeanor may be thanks to that.
Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense. All right, man. That was a big planet card. We've got more to talk about, though. So don't go anywhere.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right. So what happens next? What happens with Liara after you meet her in Mass Effect 2?
Right. You know, she tells us to hack some terminals, and that feels a little bit like a fetch quest at the time, but she's like, hey, go hack these terminals because there's some data I need to recover and, you know, could be used to pay a great debt.
Right. Go kill some rats in the basement.
You scratch my back, I scratch yours, Shepard. How about that? I don't know why Liara is like this heavy-set Italian mobster.
You went from
now, but
fetch quests to mobster, and I just stayed on fetch quests. But okay, cool.
I think I might have an attention deficit. So here's what she tells you after you go and hack those terminals.
Do you remember the Shadow Broker? With the data you got me, I may be able to find information caches from his agents.
I've got a lot on my plate. Remind me who the Shadow Broker is.
He's the most powerful and dangerous information broker in the galaxy. No one knows who he is. Given his resources, there's speculation he may actually be a group operating under one name.
Wait a minute. Are you working for the Shadow Broker?
No. Actually, I'm planning to kill him. We crossed paths not long after you died. Since then, I've been working to take him down. With this data, I'm a step closer.
This scene is cool for a few different reasons. Some of the delivery in the dialogue is just so good. Like, I've been busy. Remind me about him. Like that. Yeah. But then
so casual.
So just like, I've been busy, and maybe people haven't played the other games or read any of the comics or anything. So why don't you explain it for the audience? You know, like. But then also, like, I really do enjoy the mystery of like who is or what are the Shadow Brokers. You know, like, is it a person? Is it a group? All of this. Are you working for them? No, I'm going to go kill them. Like, that's some fun dialogue.
It's like three Volus in a trench coat.
That should be the next. What if in the next Mass Effect, it continues in the future, Liara is no longer the Shadow Broker, but she's now handed off to three Volus in a trench coat.
Incredible. That would be amazing. I would love it.
That would be great. All right.
So, you know, and yeah, it is like, you know, hey, exposition through dialogue. And then Liara goes right into, well, you remember the Shadow Broker? I want to fucking kill him. Yeah. You're like, whoa. What?
All right. Cool.
And you are even more taken aback if you did not read the comic, right? Because you're like, what is this about?
What is going on? Yeah.
Yeah, she does give Shep a little bit of you know, background on why she holds that grudge, and she apparently does still hold just as much of a grudge against the Shadow Broker as she did from the moment she had to say goodbye to Farron. And that was 2 years before this conversation even takes place. So there's this whole emotionally traumatic saga that Liara really had to deal with on her own, right? And now Shepard is back. And even though Shepard's body was really at the center of it all, it's like Shepard is stepping into this conflict as an outsider looking in on like an old feud that they weren't even around for.
Right. So how does Liara tell Shepard about this? I mean, she said she was always being listened to on Ilium. Does she open up here about it?
She does, yeah. And it's really for the benefit of the player here that she talks about it, because if she was being constantly spied on, you'd think that this would be something that she'd be like, you know, let's go somewhere private. This is for the benefit of the player. And again, one of those things that if you did not read the Mass Effect Redemption comic, you needed the context here. Much like Anderson in Mass Effect 1 telling us what happened with him and Saren in the past if you did not read Mass Effect Revelation.
Right.
So let's take a look at this clip.
Up closer. I've never seen you ready to execute someone in cold blood. What did the Shadow Broker do to you?
I was on a job with a friend. The Shadow Broker's people caught us. My friend didn't escape. I don't know if he's dead or being interrogated, but I need to find him. I owe him my life. And I need to make the Shadow Broker pay for what he did.
You can't come with me because you're after the Shadow Broker? What if I help you find him?
I'm sorry, Shepard. The galaxy doesn't work that way. I need to find leads, trace information. I need to work. I can't do that on the Normandy. I wish I could.
You spent 2 years of your life hunting the Shadow Broker? Liara, that's insane.
You don't know what he did. You couldn't. You were gone. And we all did what we had to do after that. Let's not argue. I don't have enough friends left to lose one.
That's not how the galaxy works.
Wow. I love that. I love that beat change. I mean, seriously, what skilled voice acting where Shepard is like, what are you talking about? You spent 2 years like on this revenge mission, Liara? Like, who are you?
That's
you know,
insane.
Because Shepard's still coming at this from the, you know, Liara that Shepard last knew.
Right.
And
oh, my stars.
Liara. Yeah, the oh, my stars. I need to rest. And that's not who's standing in front of her right now, you know? So it's, keep in mind also that, like we said, most players, I don't think, read these comics before playing through Mass Effect 2. So this is the first time that we as players are hearing about this from Liara. Now, knowing what we do know from the comics, it's really interesting to hear how she recounts something that Shepard wasn't even around for.
Yeah, a friend of mine, like that, like it ties right in.
Yeah, and it plays like you're actually talking to someone who's referencing something that happened in the past, giving the right amount of detail in a memory without overloading you with details that would be obvious exposition.
Right, right. It feels like the kinds of thing you would say in a conversation just like this without catering it to the audience and just filling in all the details. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that beat change, like I talked about, you know, things get a little tense, you know, with Liara and Shepard. And that line from Liara, I don't have enough friends to lose one. I don't have enough friends left to lose one.
Yeah.
Is like, wow, I think this is evidence that the same vulnerable Liara is still in there, buried under like 2 years of heavy trauma that she was really never trained to handle. Not like, you know, Shepard with combat veteran, any combat veteran getting psychological evals, things like nothing like that. And even so, that doesn't make it easy on anybody.
Sure. No, it shows us that she is going to the extremes that she is right now for very personal, emotional reasons. Like, it finally ties that all back together. She is a different person than we remember from Mass Effect 1 for very, very core emotional reasons. She doesn't want to be alone. There's something else going on deeper. That's kind of the tone there, right?
And I think the perception from a lot of players that it was this sudden shift in her personality is because it's a subtle one. Like, you really have to dig into the lines here and listen to what she's saying and how she's saying, I don't have enough friends left to lose one, to see that this is not like a completely different person, but it is someone who has had this monumental shift in their worldview.
Right. She's been suffering. I mean, that's what this alludes to, is this idea that for 2 years now, she has been suffering. So she is now acting like somebody who has been stressed and having anxiety and all sorts of other things, going to these extremes in order to do things that she finds important. And so it's made a marked change in who she is. And
the other thing is, she's Asari, right? So the emotional wound is still very fresh, maybe, for her.
Right.
Because she lives 1,000 years. What's two?
2 years is just like, what, like a month for her. Like, it's not the same for a human. So that data we hacked in the terminals in this part of the game helps her find the Shadow Broker?
Yes, it does. And it's the built-in segue for beginning that Lair of the Shadow Broker DLC that we were talking about. And we have a little bit more from the conversations with Liara as it pertains to the DLC.
Your data pointed me at logs kept by Shadow Broker agents. The logs were deleted, but it may be possible to reconstruct some of it. The Shadow Broker is cautious. His agents are referred to only by their title and race.
My inquiries have narrowed the Observer down to one of 5 operatives. A Turian, a Salarian, a Krogan, a Batarian, and a Vorcha.
If you can refine the list, I'll know where to strike.
Let me go talk to these people. I'll get the name you need.
This is a delicate operation, Shepard. If you shake down one agent, the others will go to ground, and my chance will be lost.
Liara is right. We need to get enough evidence to strike. And we need it soon.
I'm more than capable of handling the violence, Shepard. I need your help gathering the data.
Do you have any specifics on these agents?
I'm afraid not. Nyxeris was lucky to get as much as she did.
I was happy to help, ma'am.
The data is our only hope of determining which one is the Observer. And if we wait too long, they'll all disappear.
So, who is this Observer?
Right. And good catch there. It was someone hired by the Shadow Broker to keep tabs on Liara, and Liara turned it around on the Broker, using their assignment to gain a lead on him.
Mm-hmm. That's
or
smart.
Them.
Yeah.
As it turns out, the Observer is her own assistant, Nyxeris, who you heard chiming in there.
Right. She's standing behind Shepard in the clip, if you're not watching the video version of the show. Like, she's like kind of hovering there in the background.
Right. And she's very skilled at being like, yeah, we got to find this Observer. It sounds like a terrible person. You know, no better place to put a spy than to make if you're spying on someone, then to basically turn out to be their secretary. I mean, wow.
Right.
Nyxeris, the what was that? They were called Red Sparrows, right? The Soviets used them.
Oh,
yeah. The Soviets used them as spies, called Red Sparrows.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's a great movie with Jennifer Lawrence, by the way. But Nyxeris, you know, it turns out that Liara handles her. Okay, she takes her out back to the alley. No one's gonna hear from her again. Capiche? And she says, you know, Liara says, quote, she was very talented. I imagine that had she been ordered to assassinate me, I'd never seen it coming. But her barriers needed practice. Practice I'm afraid she won't be getting.
This is her new voice now?
This is Mob Boss Liara.
This is Mob Boss Liara. Wonderful.
I guess I could try and morph those
impressions. Oh, can you do like a more feminine mob boss?
I'm gonna try. I've never tried this before, so this is
it's weird to combine accents and voices. Right. Yeah.
She was very talented. Actually, that just sounds like Donald Trump.
That just sounds more like a New Yorker.
Sounds like a tiny hand mobster.
Oh man. Oh, that's amazing. Oh boy. Yeah. All right. Okay, so back on track. Where does Liara go from here with the information?
Right. So she tells us that she needs time to peel back the layers of lies and shine light into the shadows, which sounds very like, you know, while she was just going from mob boss, now that's a line that sounds, you know, peel back the layers of lies and shine light into the shadows. Sounds very paladin like, doesn't it?
I will hit them with my full hammer and summon lightning from the clouds. Yes.
These dark creatures be gone. Yeah, I know. It sounds very paladin-like to me.
But it also makes sense for somebody who's interested in information and getting the correct information, getting accurate, truthful information. So
yeah, that works. Maybe she'd be a great journalist.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but and maybe if this were fantasy, Liara would kind of like become an oath breaker, you know?
Right. Right.
I don't know. Oh, maybe it should be like Dark Bard. I don't even know what that would be.
Dark Bard. I mean, she could be like a renegade paladin. That's always a cool trope.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Oathbreaker. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, and I say this because her next line is dark and edgy. You know, she says, "And when I find the Shadow Broker, I'll hit him with a biotic field so strong that what's left of his body will fit in a coffee cup."
Yum yum. Drink up that juice. I don't know. Yummy.
Yeah. Okay. Side note, this definitely canonizes that aliens also drink coffee, right?
Or at least she's aware of coffee. I mean, she is speaking to Shepard, so she may be making a reference that makes sense for Shepard on purpose.
Right.
Like we've seen her try to get how humans are, and you know, so that could be part of it. Exactly. Or maybe she drinks coffee. I don't know.
I don't think that she acted well. Now I got to go back and look at her desk. If there's a coffee cup on her desk.
Well, just because there's a coffee cup doesn't mean she puts coffee in the cup.
Right. Could be alcohol.
She's drinking whiskey.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. And the other thing is
Yogg juice. Mr. Dragon in chat writes Yogg juice. Yeah, that would be Yogg juice in the coffee cup. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is, you know, it could be one of those turns of phrases that the Omni tool is automatically translating so that Shepard understands.
It's the equivalent of the morning drink for the Asari, which is equivalent to coffee for a human. Yeah. Okay.
Blurnsberry juice.
Good old Blurnsberry juice.
Her mouth
moves a ton and all that comes out is coffee, but it's like a multi-syllabic. Is that a word?
Syllabic.
Multi-syllabic word. She's like, it's like a translation of like those old translations where they would keep the mouth movements the same from some language where they move their mouths more. And then in English, they just say them. So like, yes. Right.
Yeah. 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 Japanese has many more syllables for some words than we do. Right, so that's right. Common with that. And from there, you know, after this coffee cup remark, it sets the stage for Liara to really take her time in tracking down the Shadow Broker. And that's a convenient way for the game to basically say, go do your thing. I'll contact you when the DLC time is ready.
Right. Right. We got more planned. Don't worry about it right now, Shep. It's cool.
Yeah.
Go do your own thing.
And then, you know, sizable chunk of Liara we get to see in Mass Effect 2. You know, that is it. The Lair of the Shadow Broker DLC is really most of the Liara content in Mass Effect 2. Aside from that conversation and the little hacking quest that we do for her. And everything that we've talked about today is really just part of Mass Effect 2. And it's basically all we see of her if you don't have the DLC. And yet it's such an impactful reunion with her because of how much she has changed.
Yeah, as I noted right at the beginning, it is a stark difference. Like the very first line of dialogue we get out of her mouth and it's just like, whoa, what happened to you? What is going on? And clearly there's a lot.
Oh, yeah. You know, when I first played through the series, I remember feeling like I was just taken aback at how much there was this, you know, paradigm shift in Liara, and maybe that's how we were supposed to feel as players. And I'm kind of now coming to that conclusion.
I think we're supposed to feel a little bit put off by it, like, it's supposed to feel uncomfortable, I think, because she is the last person you expect from Mass Effect 1 to go this direction, and she does. And for good reason. Like, they own it. The writers own it. But it's supposed to create a, oh, really? Wait, who are you? I think in similar ways to some of the other characters. Like, they do this with some of the other characters, I think, where, like, you come back to them again and you're like, oh, this is where you are now? You know, like, Jack becoming a teacher, or, I don't know, Garrus going, like, kind of dark for a bit. You know, like, there's...
Space Punisher.
Right, yeah. Space Punisher. Like, they clearly are doing this as a, like, oh, you're going to be surprised by what you get when you're like, you've been gone for 2 years and guess what's changed. Like, they have fun with it.
Yeah, they did. And I also think that it's a useful device because this is a role playing game, right? And we're playing as Shepard, who has been dead for 2 years and wasn't there for the events of Mass Effect Redemption. So they would be surprised as well. And, yeah. You know, but as we talked about last week, the lore doesn't end when Shepard died, and it continues. And so I wanted to talk about this base game Mass Effect 2 personality shift before we go any further and talking about Liara in the DLC and eventually Liara in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, so that's what's coming up next. We've got Shadow Broker DLC. We've got Mass Effect 3 still. So
it is. Yeah. And I think I was thinking about it. You know, I was talking about taking it like maybe an episode break of the Liara specific lore. And I'm thinking maybe we should do an episode on Prothean ruins and specifically the Mars archives.
Ooh. Ooh. I like that. Archaeology stuff. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Well, more stuff coming down the line. And thank you for tuning in and being here. Chat, thank you for being here. I love all the conversation and comments. Those of you who are checking out the channel for the first time, thanks for being here. And Sam, you got anything going on you want to share before we head out?
Just streaming more of my personal canon playthrough of Mass Effect to Twitch. I will be streaming that Saturdays, you know, around 2 or 3 p.m. Pacific. And go and follow me on Twitch and Twitter at N7TheLegend.
Awesome. And if you've been tuning into the Fallout TV show, which just dropped like a few days ago, and the internet's all abuzz about it, and you're kind of confused or interested in this Fallout world, you haven't played the games or whatever, I do the Fallout Lorecast. I've been doing almost 300 episodes, over 5 years of content. So I explain everything from like the Brotherhood of Steel and Vault Tech to my own reactions to the episodes. Those will be dropping as the next few weeks kind of play out. I'm going to go through each episode and dig into all the details and things. But my initial response, like my initial reaction episode's already up. So that's all stuff you can check out. Fallout Lorecast on whatever podcast you're listening to this on, or there's a YouTube channel. The YouTube channel has specific videos. So if you want the actual main feed with all the episodes, then go look up the audio versions. But that's what I've got going on. Sam, thanks for being here. Everybody, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. And we're going to talk about Prothean ruins. So that's exciting. All right. Stay safe out there and stay sweet or don't. And then people's faces off with your biotic powers. Either way, it's up to you. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.